A reading from Whispers from Eternity by Paramahansa Yogananda. Number 130, a demand to see God's love in all human love. With the love of all human loves, I have come to thee. Thou God of all loves, thou art the Father, anxious to protect his children. Thou art the little child, lisping love to its parents. Thou art the mother, showering infinite kindness on all her family. Thou dost flow in the all-surrendering love of the lover for the beloved. Thou art the love of friends for one another. Purify me with thy reverence of a servant to his master. Teach me to love thee with all pure loves, for thou art the fountain of love, both earthly and heavenly. Bathe me in the fountain spray of all loves. Om, om. Hello, everyone. It's great. Thanks, Shanti. It's great to be with you today. So the affirmation, truthfulness, and our reading today, in reflecting on both of those, I found myself reflecting, understandably, in the context of our times. And these are such challenging times. As a practice for myself, I don't watch the news a lot. I would say that I dip into the news when it feels important. And what I have found over years of practicing this is that I tend to hear the most relevant news because others watch the news. And the reason that I don't watch it often is for my consciousness, to protect my consciousness. In the reading today from Ray's, when Yogananda talks about the spine and the nervous system. I remember in my yoga teacher training, the very first training that I took, when I heard that Yogananda said the pathway to God is through the nervous system, it was revolutionary for me. I felt like, could you say that again? And then in the study of yoga, what I found is how much yoga works with our nervous system. The other thing that Yogananda said is the human being's brain is unique in all creation, that we have the capacity with our nervous system and our brain to realize God, that we can awaken through the prefrontal lobes is the point between the eyebrows, the spiritual eye. So a lot of Western medicine now in science is demonstrating teachings that line up with what the masters have always told us. So this practice of our consciousness in yoga, it's a primary thing that we're looking at. And there are many tools that we use. The first tool, I guess I would say, that comes to mind is when I'm talking about consciousness. There's subconsciousness, and that would be karma, past habits or patterns that I don't require any conscious awareness of. They'll just flow without any attention. And so learning to identify those and build good habits can be very helpful in our spiritual life. The conscious mind is the analyzing, reasoning mind. That's conscious awareness, and it absolutely has a place. Right, and then super consciousness is divine understanding. So at the very end of the rays that Krishna was talking about is the super conscious realization. Steadfast, a lamp burns, sheltered from the wind, steadfastly meditating, solitary. Such is the likeness of the yogi's mind, shut from sense storms and burning bright to heaven. That quality to be in a state of divine awareness in the midst of storms, in the midst of a stormy life. And right now things are quite stormy. So I started with saying that I don't often watch the news, but recently I have been to check in, right? I got an alert on my phone the other day saying, be careful in San Jose, there's protesting. And I mentioned it to James, and he knows I don't watch the news regularly. And he said, are you aware of what's happening? And I said, no, I'm not. So he told me about what's happening in this African-American man who was killed, to all appearances, unjustly. And, you know, the anger and rage and upset and turmoil that has come out of that is so understandable. It's so understandable. And so the affirmation today of truthfulness, I was really appreciating that the practice in yoga, as Swami says in the affirmation, is to be fearless in our willingness to face the truth, to look directly at that truth, and to be able to say when whatever is. And at the very end of the reading today of the affirmation, he was saying that without the ability to stand in the truth, we can't do anything about it, right? And he also talked about, well, how do we work with truth? How do we face it? So I've been thinking about the part of what we follow at Ananda, based on Yogananda's teachings and Swamiji's teachings of Yogananda, is Ashtanga Yoga. So that's Raja Yoga. And it's the Eightfold Path. And within that Eightfold Path, there are, what Patanjali said, they are stages of awakening. And what's interesting about it is that they're also stages of practice. So the very things that happen when we attain that state that Krishna's talking about, perfect divine union, sheltered from the storm, living in our highest truth, there are stages that we move through with that. And there are practices that all of our yoga tools, all that we do in yoga, helps us with each one of those stages. I was thinking about, well, certainly the yamas and niyamas, which are guidelines for, they're not only guidelines for behavior, but they're also guidelines for consciousness. So as we look at them in Ananda, we're always focusing on the subtle realities, not just the obvious. One of the most famous is ahimsa, nonviolence. So the idea with ahimsa, the obvious, is that we are not harming physically anyone or ourselves. And the subtle aspect of that is that we aren't thinking harmful thoughts. So when Swamiji is talking about truth and the beneficial quality of truth, he was saying it's not harsh. So we aren't using truth in a way to hurt someone. Even in our thoughts, we're not practicing truth in that way. We're looking at how can I see the truth from a calm, centered, higher awareness. I was thinking of a talk that Asha gave recently about the way of the Ananda Sanghi. The talks have been so beautiful. I've been thinking of Shanti's talks. I mean, Asha's, they're just truly extraordinary. So if you haven't had a chance to dip into those, I recommend it. In terms of working with consciousness, I find one of the best ways to work with consciousness. So the idea, Asha was telling a story of her own experience. She'd always kind of wondered about the Nazis, like, how does it happen? How does it happen that such a group of people that on one level seem refined, they love music, they love art, they have an appreciation for beauty. What is it that could allow their consciousness to turn on a whole people and do things that are beyond understanding on a human level? I mean, they're just beyond understanding. And she had an experience in the midst of the lawsuit that Ananda went through, where she and a friend were facing attorneys, and she could tell that the attorneys despised them. She could feel it. And she said to her friend, you know, I really get the feeling if it was okay, if they could get away with it, they would pull out a gun and kill us and never think another thought about it. And what Asha realized is that they had in their consciousness, which she observed, is they'd reached a point where they could make someone else them. And as long as it's them, then they can have any kind of justified thought and feeling and action and have no sense of wrong about it. Well, they're them, right? They're not me. They're wrong. They're them. And it's appropriate. I get to hate them. I get to hurt them. That is not the teaching of yoga. It's not the teaching of all true spiritual paths. Yogananda said truth is universal. So then how do we see wrong and not hate? How does that happen? I've been thinking a lot about Gandhi and Dr. Martin Luther King and all of the people in their movements who faced what feels like similar times in terms of the wrongness and the injustice of the situation. And these two leaders were spiritual leaders. And they were, to all appearances that I can see, rooted in this divine knowing that we are one. And wrong is wrong. And it should be stood up to. It should be acknowledged. It should be identified. It should be. But not with hate. Not with anger. Not with cruelty. That makes the world us and them. That doesn't lead to unity. That doesn't lead to freedom. It doesn't. But how do we do it? The path of yoga, and as it's talked about in our reading today, this nervous system that we have, guides our awareness and our energy into what Yogananda called a portable paradise within us. He said, we are divine in our nature. The yamas and niyamas, these practices and guidelines, guide us back to who we are. And from that awareness, we can see the truth, we can speak to the truth, we can challenge the truth. And what I would say as a practicing yogi is I have to be very discerning about all that I do and how it impacts my consciousness. So if I'm speaking to truth, or how can I do it in a way that doesn't move me away from my center? It doesn't allow me to shift into anything away from the yamas and niyamas. What I would say is that daily practice helps a lot. When times are like this right now, it's hard. It's hard. And so the daily practice, when things aren't as hard, help. They help. And one of the practices that's very helpful, as I was talking about Shanti's talks and Asha's talks, all the talks that are happening in Ananda around the world, is a vibration of consciousness and satsang. And so being able to align my energy, our energy, with a higher vibration, and that vibration is the truth of our own soul. I was thinking about the gunas, and Yogananda talked about, and Swamiji talked about these characteristics that are in all creation, and the tamoguna, rajoguna, sattvaguna. Tamoguna is the darkening energy, and it is very heavy and downward pulling. Raja, or rajoguna, is activating, so it's movement of energy. It can go in either direction, down or up. And sattva is the closest to the causal realm, to the divine, very uplifted, very refined. So in our yoga practice, we're always working with the gunas. You may have heard them already. You might know them well. They're there. They're a reality, and they're a beautiful way to work with consciousness. So what I ask myself when I'm looking at, well, what's the right thing to do? How do I work with this truth? How do I face it fearlessly in a yogic way? I look at the gunas, and I want to be moving towards sattva guna, because that's lifting my consciousness to the divine. And I want to be looking at activities and everything from the perspective of what is the strongest characteristic of it. So I'll go back to Dr. King and Gandhi. You know, they were in the midst of a lot of tamoguna and darkening energy, and raja coupled with it. So when you have those two things together, a lot of destruction. When you have sattva and raja together, there's a lot of beauty, a lot of light, a lot of all the activities tend to be inspiring, uplifting, healing, transformative. We had the fire ceremony this morning, and I love Shanti saying, this fire is hot. This has a lot of heat, and heat transforms all that goes into it. So the practice of purification, how do we purify the heart's feelings? The other thing I was contemplating for today is what Swami Sri Yukteswar talked about. He called it the meannesses of the heart. And what he was saying is that we want to be in the heart energy, but if we don't lift that energy to here, then what can happen is we become agitated and emotional and closed and contractive. And he advised, right, that you don't want to just go into the heart center. You want to take that energy and lift it up. Some of the things I had gotten my sheet today to just to look at, so ways in which the heart contracts: hatred, shame, fear, grief, condemnation, race prejudice, pride of pedigree, and a narrow sense of respectability. And then from our meditation teacher training, they were adding a few more. So a few more meannesses. That's what Sri Yukteswar said. The heart contracting are meannesses of the heart: resentment, judgment, jealousy, and anger. Indulging in any of these attitudes contracts the heart and imprisons its energy, keeping you from giving yourself completely. And that's the idea, is how do we give ourselves completely? How do we give the heart? Asha has said that over her years with Swami Kriyananda, it took her a while to understand that his heart was wide open and that he faced life honestly, directly, and truthfully, and fearlessly. And she really couldn't imagine for a very long time his capacity to keep the heart open and still be loving. We can do it. It is the promise of the practice of yoga. We can do it. The masters came to tell us this is our birthright. It is our birthright to be free, to be able to feel very deeply the truth in a very refined and purified and powerful way. There is great power in us, in every one of us, in all of life. The divine spark is there, and we can call on that energy to lift our consciousness, to lift ourselves, and to be a healing presence in the world. That very healing presence calls forth that light in others. Yogananda said the soul recognizes the soul. And part of what I've been reminding myself of lately is the power of these practices, because they are so refined and in many ways quiet, and that beautiful image of the yogi at the end, solitary. There is a big aspect of the journey that does feel quite solitary. The song that was sung today, Go On Alone, to be able to feel we aren't alone, but in the calm, quiet, centered awareness of the heart, God lives, guides and protects and helps us to rise and be our highest self. May we all bring that light to the world.